Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The position that we have in, which is the position that is that everybody should get a give an additional tax cut to the wealthiest 2%, that will heap $700 billion in debt onto our children and our grandchildren.
Can't we be sweethearts? Why don't we fall in love right from the start? You're the girl I'm thinking of. Oh, can't you see? You're the only girl.
It is Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation. This song is not directed at Nancy Pelosi.
Please be my sweetheart. Don't you know the way I feel? Please play the pop.
It is Rock and Roll Friday, open mic to Mike Friday, 1-800-449-8255. Of course, the big story is one you've not heard yet because the vermin in the newspaper business have buried it. Up in Sacramento, California, a little 13-year-old boy named Cody rides to school with an American flag on the back of his bicycle. He says he did it to be patriotic and to honor veterans such as his own grandfather, Robert, who fought in Vietnam. He had the flag on his bicycle for 2 months, but Monday, so-called school officials told him to take the flag down. They said some students had been complaining about the flag, and therefore the American flag was no longer allowed on the property. School was afraid that there'd be racial tensions or uprising because of the American flag. So apparently the Mexican illegal aliens don't like the American flag. And so they made the boy take the flag off his bicycle. I'm sure he would be allowed to fly the rainbow flag, the Mexican flag, a Che Guevara flag or T-shirt, a Mao Tse-Tung murder flag or murder T-shirt. But apparently the American flag is not permitted. It's not part of the diversity in the American school system today. Now, you haven't read that story because the vermin in the media actually agree with him. The very same vermin in the media who said it's okay for hippies to burn the American flag say it's not okay for a 13-year-old boy to ride with the American flag on the back of his bicycle. Anything Christian, anything patriotic, anything stands for America is now verboten in the United States of America in the school system. I have another story here on the Savage Nation. This came out of a newspaper over in England, an obscure newspaper named The Guardian. And it's the new George Bush book. And it says the right word, Limbaugh's Lovin' with Bush. It says George W. Bush found a receptive audience touting his memoirs around the TV and radio studios. Only Michael Savage objected. And then they go to Sean Hannity and they say, you could feel the love between talk show host and the former president. Then they go from him down to the golfer. And it says the love fest continued on the Rush Limbaugh show. And, of course, Rush loved him as well. And they go down the list to Michael Savage. And last stop was The Savage Nation, a daily radio show hosted by shock jock Michael Savage. Shock jock? I'll give you shock jock. I'll give you shock jock. All right, but that's English. That's the English for you today. A self-styled conservative nationalist. Now, what is a self-styled conservative nationalist? What does self-styled mean? Who sums up his political philosophy in three words, borders, language, and culture. Then she says, yes, that's four word, but who's counting? Well, lady, it should have been four words if you want to get picayune. You missed your S. It says, President Bush did not make a personal appearance on the show, which might account for the following segment from The Savage Show. And here's what I said. Wasn't old G.W. Bush president? The newly popular, newly invented George W. Bush, a wallbanger, that savage speak for Sean Hannity. I don't understand how you people don't see through this. That Russian wallbanger, our frontman for the Republican Party. I don't know how many times I have to tell you. I am the Tea Party of radio. I am the Tea Party of radio. They are mouthpieces, water carriers for the Republican Party. And Bush was a fiscal socialist. What are they reinventing the guy for? Bush built up the government bigger than the four administrations prior to his. Now, all of a sudden, he's the wonderful senior president from the past. He's sort of a Republican Jimmy Carter, babbling around signing books. I understand he has to sign his books with a mirror next to his pen, the way he spoke for so many years. He spoke fiscal conservatism, and he gave us fiscal socialism. Then she writes, this savage outburst floored me. President Bush, a socialist? A Republican Jimmy Carter? Could Savage be hinting in his delicate way that former President Bush expanded government more than any other president? That he turned the budget surplus into a $1 trillion deficit? That he dragged the nation into a quagmire from which we're still struggling to emerge 2 years later? If that's what Savage is suggesting, then Savage and I have found some common ground. Well, up to a point, she says. I have to take issue with the socialism charge, she writes. I mean, if former President Bush was a socialist, then where does that leave our current president, Obama? I feel like putting the D-U-H after that. Yes, President Bush was a socialist. Where does that leave our president, our current President Obama? Read Trickle Up Poverty, lady. I lay it out in the book. He's a pan-Leninist. Speaking of whom, could you please come home? Could you come home soon, please? Your country needs you. I'd actually hope he stays away for another year. I think he should continue traveling. Even at $200 billion, how much at $200 million a day is cheaper than what he'd spend if he came home? I mean, it's actually a bargain for him and his family to stay on a vacation. $200 million a day, 5 days, that's a trillion. No, that's a bit. $200 billion a day? $200 billion a day? Is that, no, it was $200 million a day. How much was it? It was $200 million a day. What was the figure that was bandied about? Whatever. $1 billion a week would be cheap compared to what he's going to spend when he comes. But let's say we give him $1 billion a week to stay on the trip. Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, because think of all the ice cream sandwiches they could buy in so many different multicultural flavors, right? You know, an ice cream sandwich. Then she can come back and tell you to eat, let them eat carrot sticks. That should become the watchword of the Obama administration. Let them eat carrot sticks while she's seen scarfing down the hamburgers and fries. Now, the best soundbite of it, do you have any idea what you're listening to? You're listening to the greatest voice in the history of talk radio, Michael Savage. When God made me, he broke the mold. I'm a one-off. I can never be repeated. I'm like a Ferrari that was made once. One model of this Ferrari was made, me. So enjoy the ride around the track. Now, here is Nancy Pelosi about the elections in clip 15. You got to hear this, followed up by a certain cartoon character.
The position that we have, and which is the position that the president has put forth, is that everybody should get a tax cut in our country. The problem comes when you give
a... I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
All right, and enough is enough. Now, let's stop picking on people. You have no right to do that. 1-800-449-8255. So we've already thrown out the stories of the boy with the American flag forced to take it off his bicycle. We have talked about Michael Savage claiming Bush was a fiscal socialist. We have talked about Porky Pig unable to say the Pledge of Allegiance. Can I have clip number two now? Here is Obama in South Korea.
In Toronto, we said, here's what we need to do. Let's have this ready by the time we get to Seoul. It wasn't real sexy back in Toronto, and nobody really wrote about it, but it actually moved the ball forward in terms of a coordinated response to financial regulation.
Okay, clip six is a real doozy. This one comes right from... Please, listen to this.
This gentleman right here, he's got his hand up. He's the only one who took me up on it. Go ahead. And I'll probably need a translation, though, if you're asking the question in Korean. In fact, I definitely will need a translation.
Unfortunately, I hate to disappoint you, President Obama. I'm actually Chinese.
Oh, he says he's going to need a translator because if he's going to ask his question in Korean. And he says, I'm sorry to disappoint you, President, but I'm actually Chinese. Well, I guess to the President...
it's wonderful. I think I get to represent the entire Asia.
Absolutely.
We're one family here in this part of the world.
Well, your English is better than my Mandarin also, so.
Thank you.
But now, in fairness, though, I did say that I was going to let the Korean press ask a question. So the
How about you, we'll hold up your hand, Korean friends allow me to ask a question on your behalf?
Well, it depends on whether there's a Korean reporter who'd rather have the question. No? No takers? Oh, this is getting more complicated than I expected.
Oh, my God. So the Chinese intimidated the Koreans into not asking questions. They wanted to ask them for them. This is an amazing interchange that should not be forgotten too quickly. It's a very important one, where the president, to his credit, wants a Korean reporter to ask him a question. And a Chinese reporter, meaning a government reporter, gets up and says, well, say, play six again, because I think my audience already forgot what we're doing.
This gentleman right here, he's got his hand up. He's the only one who took me up on it. Go ahead. And I'll probably need a translation, though, if you're asking the question in Korean. In fact, I definitely will need a translation.
Unfortunately, I hate to disappoint you, President Obama. I'm actually Chinese.
Ooh! So this was terrible sound quality, by the way. The critical word that my staff omitted is, he says, if he asks his question, real superb. But a reporter says, sorry, he's actually Chinese. So then he pushes it, the president, and he says, any no-takers from the Korean press? And they're afraid. Obviously, the Korean press was intimidated. This is the message that I get out of this. Maybe one day I won't be able to even do a show. You'll hear a man like that getting up and say, hello, Savage Nation. And people say, well, where's Mike? Oh, he's not feeling good today. They could even be training somebody right now to sound like me, to get up here and dupe you into thinking that it would be me. It's possible. After all, who knows who's running the country anymore? Who knows who's running this country anymore? Do you actually believe anyone's running it? You think anyone's in charge of the country? I've never seen a group of incompetents like this in my life. And here we are. But the important thing is that diversity is marching on. The important thing is that diversity has improved under Obama. The important thing we learned today was that under the Chris Dodd, Barney Frank,
he's a guy from Massachusetts, talks like that. Barney Frank and Chris Dodd put together a certain regulatory bills, and the Dodd-Frank diversity clauses in there.
The Dodd-Frank diversity clauses in the financial overhaul has created 20 new offices of minority and women inclusion because of pressure from the esteemed and above board Mrs. Maxine Waters. She wants to make sure that qualified minority and women-owned businesses continue to not be excluded from contracting opportunities made available by the government's historic intervention at banks and other financial institutions. So the clause requires 20 new offices of minority and women inclusion in the Treasury, the SEC, the FDIC, the Office of the Comptroller, the 12 Federal Reserve Banks, and the newly created Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Ziggy. All right, it's 1-800-449-8255. I ran a little late, but it doesn't matter. I'm having a good time. And what I want to do is play a little rock and roll and go into a break. Go ahead, please. Same song.
Can't we be sweethearts? Why don't we fall in love right from the start? You're the girl I'm thinking of. Oh, can't you see? You're the only girl for me.
Thank God it is. Thank heavens it is Friday. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. No charges against Bill Gates' dad in a hit and run. Now, if you hit someone and ran, you'd be in the slammer. But the Seattle City Attorney's Office, there's a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft, has decided not to press charges against Bill Gates' father after the community leader, Bill Gates' father is now a community leader, apologized for hit-and-run collision and paid for damages. Investigators say they found Bill Gates Sr.'s Mercedes near Seattle Center wedged against another car with the engine running and the keys in the ignition. The owner of the other car called 911, and Gates' vehicle was towed. When he and a friend returned, the 84-year-old Gates was given a citation for a hit-and-run. No one was injured in the incident. Gates' friend said at the time that Gates may have had a senior moment and didn't know he had done it. Now they said that Bill Gates Sr. was unaware the incident happened until he returned to his car. This is the same Bill Gates Sr. whose family has made billions or trillions, we can't keep count, who now wants to tax everyone in the state of Washington. Washington is one of the few tax-free states in the country, which is why it has a decent economy. And now the trillionaires want you to pay a state income tax. They want you to do as they do after they've made their mega fortune. But apparently there are no charges against Bill Gates' dad in a hit-and-run. Compare that to the Girls Gone Wild distributor who was booked in a West Hollywood hit-and-run. How's that possible? Ordinary people get booked for hit-and-runs, but if you give enough money to certain organizations, you don't get booked for hit-and-run? Muslim group says more pilgrims' passports delayed. A so-called Muslim civil rights group is concerned that the U.S. government is delaying the shipment of passports to those making religious pilgrimages to Saudi Arabia. The so-called Council on American Islamic Relations raised the issue after a Northern Virginia mosque reported that 17 people missed their flight to Saudi Arabia when their passports were temporarily seized. The council says it has learned of three other packages containing pilgrims' passports being held up by security checks. I'm out of time already? Okay, I'm out of time already.
Savage.
God, Maud, that savage just keeps on trucking. How does he do it? God, Maud, where does he get that energy from? God, Maud, how does he do it? Week after week, month after month, year after year. Maud, where does he get that energy from? And all those books. 27 books. How can he do it? How can he have had so many different careers and survive all of them and thrive in all of them, Maud? How does he do it? How can he be so many men in one? Maud, what can I tell you? You know, people don't even know about the years I spent in the South Pacific collecting medicinal plants, living in villages, drinking Yangona, Amdo, hey, Andina, drinking Yangona with the incredible people of the Fiji Islands. I didn't need a Fijian translator. They looked in my eyes and they said, I think he's Fijian, and that was all I needed. Didn't need a teleprompter to sit on the straw hut and drink the Yangona. Nope, didn't need a teleprompter. They just looked right into my soul and figured that they could trust me, which they can. I didn't rip them off. Never took anything from them. Soul is clean. Soul is clean, not mean. Can I tell you a little side story? I'm just drifting around on Friday. It's Rock and Roll Friday. You can call it anything you want, Trickle Up. Poverty, lights on the road yesterday, the stories I mentioned. I'm a superstitious man, I must tell you. Although I'm highly trained in science, as you know, I am a superstitious man at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive, incidentally. And many of you say, well, how could you kind of believe in God and read your horoscope? I said, because they're not mutually exclusive. I'm not rigid in any, you know, area. I'm not one thing or the other. Maybe I'm too many things, I mean, to be fair to the discussion, but I am an American in that regard. I'm a mixture of things at this point in my life. For better or for worse, no one's perfect, but we are a product of our education, our experiences, and all of that. So to make a long story short, I'm a superstitious man. It must have been 30 years ago. I was living in the Hawaiian Islands, and I used to go back in the valley, Nu'uanu Valley, I believe, and there was a stream that coursed through that valley. Obviously, there were rocks in the stream. I remember being in the back of the valley and coming upon a petroglyph. A petroglyph is an ancient Hawaiian stone carving of some kind, but they all had spiritual value. to the Hawaiian people. I found that it would have been some of some value at the time, probably today of immense value. I knew it was a valuable antiquity or artifact, let's put it to you that way, which would become an antiquity. I looked at it, I thought about it, and I placed it right back in the hollow in the water. Nope, I don't want to carry that around. And I'll tell you another story. Once I was in Israel back in 1978, 79, I was thinking of moving there. I didn't move there for many reasons, but I went to a town on the Golan Heights, or near the Golan Heights, called Sfat. And it's a pretty ancient town which had some amazing houses made of stone. And I could have bought a stone house up there for $12,000 at the time. I knew it was a steal. I knew what would happen because I saw that the religious Jewish people were living there. I saw that the artists were coming in from everywhere. And wherever artists go, you know, that becomes very valuable housing eventually. It's what the Hamptons was built on. De Kooning and the others were living out there in the Hamptons when it was farm country, and eventually the camp followers arrived and turned it into a bourgeois paradise. So I saw this house in Sfat for $12,000. I knew it was a good deal, and I refused to buy it. I said, I am not going to capitalize on a spiritual quest. I won't do it. And I left Israel. So I'm not looking for a halo. Or in a way, I am. I'm saying I'm not, but in a way, I'm trying to burnish my halo. Everything is self-serving. All right, yeah, Paul was writing All His Vanity. Did he write All His Vanity? Who wrote that? Whoever can tell us who wrote All His Vanity wins a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Is there an expert in the audience on spiritual matters? Was it Paul or Joe and Paula Farginigan? Who wrote that, All His Vanity? Ecclesiastes. I knew him well. He wasn't a bad guy. Sometimes I couldn't get along with Ecclesiastes. He could be a real pain in the neck, I want to tell you. First of all, his name set him back. His parents didn't do him a favor by calling him Ecclesiastes. Can you imagine a little child? Ecclesiastes, can you come here, please? Ecclesiastes, you didn't put your shoes under your bed. Ecclesiastes, go pick the olives. So that right away gave him an inferiority complex with a name like that. They couldn't have named him Sam or Ben or Harry. They had to name him Ecclesiastes. So I knew the guy wasn't a bad guy. I personally knew him. It was Ecclesiastes, huh? What would you like to do today? Take a call? I mean, I'm asking myself, really. I'm thinking out loud. I'll tell you what's bothering me. You could see I'm bargaining for time on the show today, right? You could feel there's a stall. There's a stall here, and I'll tell you what it is. It's Friday. It's Rock and Roll Friday. I've worked my heart out for the last month on telling you about Trickle Up Poverty. I want you to buy it for Thanksgiving because I think you're going to need it. It's a very important book for the table and for the holidays. Buy it, you know, for your relatives. And I've done that, and I'm going to do a little bit more of it, believe me. But here's the thing. I may be traveling tomorrow, and I get a little off base when I'm going to take an airplane flight, especially with the frisks and the x-ray job. Now, it is true that I hate to travel even without the frisking and the x-ray job. I just don't like flying to begin with. Even though I said to you last week I'm thinking of taking up flying, I don't like flying. Now, that's not a paradox. You don't understand this. It's about control. The reason I love boating is because I'm piloting the boat myself. I don't particularly like being in a car if I'm not driving it. I'm a person who must be in control. Now, you say, are you the only one like that? No. I mean, I read stories years ago of pilots who flew 747s at the time who were totally nervous flyers when they were passengers. They had to drink 2, 3, 4 wines to sit in the seat. When they were behind the pilot's seat, they were okay because they were in charge. They knew what was going on. You follow what I'm saying? It's a control thing. There are some people like myself who must be in control of their lives. So to even go to the dentist is a thing that they don't want to do. Like today, I went to the dentist for another evaluation prior to another implant. Not a heart implant, but another pin that broke last year, a titanium pin, which I still don't understand. Did you know that story? Almost a year ago to this day, I had a tooth implant. Tooth pulled out, implant put in, tooth put over it, everything fine. And then in December, Mitt Romney wanted to have dinner with me, which we had, by the way. You don't know about this. I haven't talked about it. He's a very nice man. Him and I, one-on-one, in the North Beach area, we had dinner. Very, very, got along well. I got very worked up. I went home, and I told Mrs. S. about the dinner with Mitt Romney, and I forgot what I was doing. I bit into a piece of hard bread, and I snapped off. I heard a crack in the mouth. Bing. The pin snapped. I said, oh, my God, here we go again. So the pin broke. So then already we have a whole new story. Now they had to do a bone transplant, which the guy didn't tell me was a cadaver bone, and I was afraid I'd become like a liberal or a communist. I mean, what if the bone was from a commie, I thought? You know, maybe there was a little DNA left over. They say they scrub it, but who knows? And I was, you know, you don't know. Or like, if you're going to get a bone, I would much rather have had like a synthetic piece of plastic put in my head. But the crackpot dentist who sold me the defective pin then put the bone in. After it was done, then he said, he didn't ask me, do you want a cadaver bone or a plastic implant? I would have definitely chosen the synthetic. Because like for months, I walked around like there was like a Frankenstein in me. I was waiting for odd things to happen with the cadaver bone. You remember I joked about it on the radio about the cadaver bone, how weird it was, like having someone else's bone in your mouth? Like right next to my nose on top of it. I can't explain. It's very icky. It's just too intimate for me, the whole thing with someone else's bone in my mouth. I can't explain it. Because this wasn't a chicken bone. This was a Homo sapiens. You know what I'm saying? This was not anything. So anyway, I go today. It's a year later. The bone is in. I still haven't had the implant put in, the new titanium pin, because it's a one-shot deal. If they do this and it fails again, what are they going to do? So I waited a year, and I went to see an expert this time instead of a shady crackpot. And, the other one was weird. He did it. It was like a weird thing. I don't like dental offices where they have open stalls. You see a guy like, you know, spitting out Lavoris next to you while you're having like surgery. And there's eight of you like you're like a Purdue chicken on a line. Who wants to be in that situation? I felt like a dental school. It was like the Bronx School of Dentistry. This guy has some racket going, rushing from mouth to mouth. He should have been a Seamus in a pickle factory instead of a dentist, this guy. Which is a ritual circumciser, for those of you who don't know old German. Anyway, he's a dentist, and they developed a thing with open chairs, and I'm sitting there. It was so humiliating. You know, the guy next to you is like, you're laying there with your head back, half obliterated with God knows in your mouth, and next to you is a guy spitting out Lavoris, staring you in the eye. So I'm never going to go back to that crackpot. So I go to an upscale today, top-of-the-line periodontist, finally. I go to the dignified, terrific guy. So the dog is with me. Teddy's with me in the car. The young man who drives me, I figured I'd leave Teddy in the car with him. But the dog doesn't want to be apart from me for a second. Not a second. So I go in, and I say to the young lady, I said, do you mind if I bring my dog in? She said, not really. Nah, it's okay. She said, we'll bring him in the back door. So Teddy now, I'm laying back. The guy, Teddy jumps on my chest, and he's guarding me. As the periodontist is probing my mouth, which was very cute. The dog is so protective. That's the beautiful thing about dogs. Absolute loyalty. Total loyalty. So, and I said to the dentist, you know, it's a different world than the one I grew up in. What a world it would have been if I could have taken Tippy into the dental office with me when I was a kid. He could have bitten the dentist and I would have been out of there in 5 minutes. Tippy is the dog that I had as a kid. Remember I wrote about him years ago, bit me right down to the bone. That was a vicious half chow. My father always liked, like, mean dog. He knew all a different world. It was a different world. He liked a tough dog, came from a different world. I like a wimpy, like, attack poodle. I have a wimpy pit poodle, I call him. He's 100% poodle, 10 pounds, but I named him my pit poodle just for a joke. But he's not trimmed like a poodle. Don't get me wrong. It's not like one of those ugly poodle trims. He's like, he's got a little teddy bear. So anyways, on my chest as the guy's probing today, and I here's the point of the story. Other than filling in time on a Friday. Here's the point of the story. So I said to this expert periodontist, I said, let me ask you something. Are there different quality titanium implant pins? You know, he said, sure there are. He said, there's different manufacturers. So I said, you mean to tell me they're like Rolls-Royce titanium pin manufacturers as opposed to let's say a Prius implant? Yes, he said. He said, we only get the ones from the Nobel company in Sweden who invented them. So right away, I said, wait a minute, maybe that other dentist, the guy with that bad clinic type setup, maybe he bought a defect, you know, like a cheaper pin, and he built the, you know what I'm saying, he made $10 more on it. You don't know. You don't know what they're putting in your head. Even down to the pin, someone's trying to screw you. My father was 100% right. He taught me, trust nobody. Everyone will rob you if they can. Everyone will take from you if they can. Trust nobody. Was he right? He was a cynical guy. I mean, he was a Russian immigrant. What, was he wrong in the world he came from? Everyone, he said, is out to take from you. Don't be a moron. From the time I didn't even know what a moron was. Didn't trust the soul. Okay, say it's no way to live. The American way is trust everyone like a schmuck. You know, when they knock on your door and tell you they're the gas man, let them in so they can kill you. That happened last 2 weeks ago in San Francisco. A young woman, a nice woman, good-looking woman in her late 30s, early 40s, a crackpot, a maniac, goes around with a plastic helmet on his head and a flashlight and a utility belt, and he knocks on every door in the building ringing bells. Hello, gas man, you got a leak. I got to put the leak out. No one lets him in but this woman. He rapes her and kills her. You hear? I don't like gas men to begin with. I don't like the guy who like looks at the meter. I don't like it. It's like the TSA. What's he looking at the meter for? In this day and age, they have to send the guy around to look at your meter? I always say to him, why are you coming to my house to look at the meter? Why can't you do it at the home office? He said, well, we're not set up for that. I said, well, it's only 2010. I mean, you can't put a computer in and see how much gas I used? So now they're coming up with a so-called smart meter. To me, you want to know what this is all about? Government intrusion. So they can come and look at your house and look in the window. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is. Pardon me for that diversion into the dentist, the dental chair. But everyone needs a break once in a while. So as I was saying before, I was rudely interrupted by the commercial messages that pay my bills and make it possible for you to listen to me for free. Thank God for the advertisers. And you should really understand how important it all is. I mean, you know, nothing's free in this world. You know, I've never said that in 16 years now. I never mentioned that. It's like, it doesn't happen for nothing. All right, let's take a call. Delroy, New York City, WOR. What's on your mind, Delroy?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a longtime listener. Love your show. I think you're the greatest thing on talk radio. Like your dentist, you're like the Rolls Royce of radio.
Thank you. That's very nice, the Rolls Royce of radio. I appreciate it.
Right. So before I say what I want to say, Michael, I'm a Bible reader, too. But I didn't think there was a person called Ecclesiastes. I think Solomon wrote Book of Solomon, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes. So I just wanted to throw that in.
No, it's very important that you got my joke. There was no one named Ecclesiastes. What does Ecclesiastes mean in Hebrew, though?
That's what I wanted to go find out because I never thought of that. So I got to go back and look what that meant, what that means. But what I wanted to say, Michael, is that, you know, I really appreciate your show. And, you know, I come from Jamaica. I always consider myself a Democrat. But the more I listen to your show, I realize I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican, but I'm a conservative. I think the things that you say and the things you stand for align with my views and with how I grew up as a kid.
I understand. That's exactly what people don't understand. Is that I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I truly am an independent, but I must say I'm not an independent liberal. I'm an independent conservative, and that's very important. Now, what do I mean by conservative? The word itself has been given a bad name. You might say I'm a traditionalist. I believe in borders, language, and culture. Why is that so difficult for anyone to accept? I don't get it.
No, I think it's beautiful, and I love it. And I want to bring your book with me to Thanksgiving because all my family, they're Democrats. And, yeah, we all voted.
Where are you having Thanksgiving dinner, in Jamaica or here in New York?
No, I'm going down to Maryland where my siblings are. But, you know, everybody there.
Well, hold on. You're going to go to Maryland, and you're going to dare bring in Michael Savage's Trickle Up Poverty? First of all, I'll give you an extra copy, but. Well, all right. And what, you're going to try and make sense out of some of it? Is that it? What if they say, oh, I don't want to read him. He's a right winger. Don't believe anything he said. So you say, what are you going to say to him? You got to say, well, look, why don't we just look at one paragraph together and see if you agree or disagree?
Exactly, Michael, because if I just say it, they'll say, ah, you're just talking trash. But if I could show your book, because I know you have the references and you've done the research, so they can read it for themselves and know that the things that I'm perceiving about the Obama administration are what you prove in your book, that we're not just blowing smoke.
That's right. That's right. Well, the beauty here is that you have a big job ahead of you. You have a big job ahead of you because you've stepped out from the family political belief system. And you got to understand, they're not going to necessarily go along with you, even if you make sense, and even if your politics prove to be correct, they won't admit you're right. Most people are herd animals, Delroy. It is very difficult for a family member to stand apart and stand alone on issues such as we are discussing.
You
are a religious man, I take it, Delroy.
I am religious, and that's what the Bible tells you to do. You have to stand for truth, no matter if it's popular or if it's unpopular.
This is a fabulous question. You know, it says, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. But truth has gotten men imprisoned and killed in the past. You know that. I mean, I'm banned in Britain because of the truths that I have spoken. That country has sunk so far into the mire of left-wing fanaticism that they banned me and put me on a list with murderers. So you have to understand there may be consequences. You may be ostracized by your family.
But that's okay, Michael, because, you know, if you think of the Bible, think of the three Hebrew boys. When Nebuchadnezzar told them that if they don't bow to what he's about to ask them to do, that even if they said that even if we burn in that furnace, we will do. But we know that our God will stand
all right.
By us.
So, well, I admire you, and I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty so you can give it away to the most intelligent of your Democrat relatives at the Thanksgiving table. Thank you very much for that call.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. 'Tis twilight time.
It is the Savage Nation. It is twilight time in most of the world, most of America right now, isn't it? Yeah, I love daylight saving time. Love it. Oh, do I hate long days, endless sun. I like early dark. 5, it's plenty for me. For me, it's a long day's journey into night every day. Eugene O'Neill wrote that book for me, that play for me, believe me. The only difference is I never went to the needle. I went to the microphone instead. So here we are on the Savage Nation, and you're seeking my guidance on important things in the world. If you have a question or a comment, you know the number, but don't call it, because Friday's very, very amazing. People are more relaxed. They call the show. We're jammed up. You can't get through. The website's there. The show is here. All aboard. What would you like to talk about? That's the issue. Let's go to the callers of what I want to talk about. Las Vegas, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I love your Friday shows, Dr. Savage. I'll tell you.
Thank you.
I am a retired fighter pilot in the Air Force, flew F-16s. I got about over 3,000 hours in the airplane.
Unbelievable.
Just like you, can't stand someone else flying the airplane. I'm in a job now that requires me to travel quite a bit.
Isn't that amazing? I don't think people understand this, but I had read about it years ago that many pilots, as brave as they are, as competent as they are, hate being a passenger in a jet.
I can't stand it, especially when you hear the stories of, you know, they come out in the media where they've been drinking before flying and whatnot. And, you know, you're so, at least in the military, you get very high quality training. And
yes.
Guys that are in the airlines, I'm afraid to say, don't have that quality training. But, you know,
I know that for a fact. I got to tell you the truth. Even years ago, when I got an airplane, I always, you know, they used to, the pilots used to have their door open in the great heyday prior to the invasion of the body snatchers, or shall we say the invasion of the freedom snatchers. Prior to the invasion of the freedom snatchers, the pilots would have the door, you know, the cabin door open, and you'd look at them. I always looked for a gray-haired guy with blue eyes, and I'd often stop, and I'd say, hey, how you doing? Do you have any military experience? I would do it as a joke. And they got the joke. They understood it was no joke.
Guy, you know, Sully, the guy who saved the airplane, what was it, Kennedy or LaGuardia or whatever, and landed in the river.
Yes.
You know, prior military guy. But, you know, I find myself checking the flaps before takeoff, making sure anything I can to make sure they're doing
stuff right. Oh, you must be fun to fly with. I'm sure you're just relaxed as can be on a 5-6 hour cross-country flight.
Well, I figure, you know, once we're up and away after about, 15, 20 minutes after takeoff, then I fall asleep, you know. But until that point.
How about on the landing? How do you handle the landing?
Landing's not too bad. If there's weather, I get a little nervous, you know, and you know, if you don't break out until, you know, 500
yeah.
feet. So if there's bad weather.
Sometimes I fly on a Citation 10, and often the pilots are some are ex-military, some are not. They're all very competent, frankly. A lot of these young guys are very competent. You know what I like the best about the landing is I love hearing the computer as it speaks. It says 50, 40, 30, 20. You know that sound? Don't you love that?
Yeah. And if it starts saying pull up, you know, that's not good.
Oh, thank you. Do the commercial jets have that computerized voice giving you the altitude?
Oh, yeah, they got all kinds of things. They'll tell you, you know, gear if your gear's not down or something like this, or you're low.
Isn't it true that a commercial jet could literally fly itself today on autopilot?
Well, it can, and I'm not real smart on them, but from what I understand, you can get auto land assist all the way down to the flare, you know.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that, and the strange part is that the landings on a commercial jet that are computer landings are smoother, usually, than some of the piloted landings. I've seen that as well.
Yeah, I like the ones when they come in and drop it in, you know, good bounce. So.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't want to make any comments about that because certain people might get offended.
No, I don't mean to say airline guys are that bad. I mean, really, but I will tell you.
No, come on, but you Air Force guys are definitely arrogant. You should be. You're supposed to be. Isn't it built into the breed? Aren't you supposed to be arrogant? Arrogant enough to face an enemy pilot in combat? I would say that arrogance should be required.
Oh, it's definitely required. And
hey, do they still teach the guys to kill the enemy? Or do they teach them to tip wings at them before firing?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean,
you mean the Obama Air Force doesn't teach you to try and negotiate prior to engaging an enemy, even in training?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I retired just before Obama was elected.
Oh, my God. So in your opinion, you know, in my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I talk about the killing of the Raptor fighter. You know much about that?
Well, yeah, I read up on it quite a bit. I mean, the complaint is it's a gold-plated fighter that costs a lot of money, and you know, it's not earning its wings, so to speak, in the fight that we're in right now. But I mean, we got to look to the future. So,
right? You know, isn't it true that all things being equal, pilots of both sides being equal, that the superior plane is going to win the battle?
Well. You know, it really comes down to who's sitting in the cockpit, because...
No, but let's say you're facing off against a Chinese, just for argument's sake, pilot from China. And you're both equally trained. Wouldn't the superior plane be the better judge of who's going to win that battle?
Well, it can give you an advantage, that's for sure. But, you know, if one guy isn't having a real good day, he's not feeling good, or he loses sight, you know, it's just like a sporting event. If the player just isn't having a good day, you know, it applies the same, you know. So.
Well, no, I look back at the Battle of Britain, the seminal battle of Britain's seminal battle in World War II. Had they not had the Spitfire, they would not have been able to beat the Messerschmitt, the ME-109. even if all the pilots were equal. It was that Spitfire that turned the tide, and it was Winston Churchill who funded the development of the Spitfire against the socialists who did not want that plane built.
Didn't want it, yeah. And there was.
But we have the same thing going on. See, but, John, in my opinion, that's what's going on today. Obama is the equivalent of Chamberlain. He's trying to cut our advanced technology in the military because his mindset is that of pacifism, socialism, one-worldism. And at the same time he's doing that, did you know that the Russians are expanding their fighter forces more now than at any time since the end of the Cold War? Do you know that the Russians plan to field 300 Su fullback strike aircraft by 2022 and an additional 300 Sukhoi PAC fifth-generation fighters? It's all in my book, Trickle Up Poverty. And I'm going to send it to you. It's under Obama's War on the Military and National Security. It should be required reading at the Air Force Academy. I think I have more information here than they're teaching some of these kids about what's happening to our country.
Well, I thank you very much, Dr. Savick.
Well, I was sending you a free copy. You've got to get it. You've got to tell it to your Air Force buddies to read what he's doing to us, because this is very serious business. I mean, as an amateur student of warfare, amateur student, and I emphasize both words, all things being equal, those with superior technology usually won. Not always, but usually. It's always been true.
Sure. And, I got two master's degrees in strategy and policy and operational art of military war. So, I'd be glad to spread that around for you.
Hey, John, how did you come up in the Air Force world? Did you train as a civilian pilot first, or did you get all your basic training in a small plane in the military?
I went to college at the University of Florida and went through the ROTC program there. And,
that's banned in California. They banned that in California because they can only teach children how to put condoms on cucumbers out here, not how to fly a jet.
Well, by the grace of God, I had decent eyes, and I made decent grades, and won a pilot slot. And, I did a little bit of civilian flying, but not much. And then out of college, I got my commission and went straight into pilot training.
Well, thank God for your service. I appreciate it. Thank you for calling the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Pittsburgh, PA. Adam, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
A poverty story for you.
Oh.
I purchased your book earlier in the week, and I was on lunch from my dental practice, just sitting in the cafe reading the book. And one of the young ladies from behind the counter came over and was just kind of inquisitively asking about the book and inquiring about it, and told her a little bit about you, a little bit about the book, and I gave her the book. I said, do me a favor, just read the book. Keep an open mind, and I guarantee you will agree with almost every single point in the book.
And what, you mean this was a young barrister in a coffee shop?
Yes, sir.
But she was curious enough to ask what was in the book, or what was it about?
Exactly. She was curious enough to ask, and
you're an amazing man to have bought a copy and given it away, but truthfully, and I don't want to sound like I'm just pushing books, I only wish that everyone who bought a copy goes and buys another one and gives it away to a stranger. Just think of the revolution we could cause with that information.
Well,
I'm going to send you a replacement copy, though, however. Okay, because by the time children get to college, the transformation of their thinking has been almost completed. It starts in the kindergarten. The children are given the benefits of Marxism and socialism. They're taught, in some cases, by overt Maoists, and the NEA is overt about it. The children are marched into these Orwellian institutions, and they are told to go out and build the future for the progressive revolution. And by the time they get to college, it's almost over. And so the professors who themselves revere the murderers like Mao Zedong, they have no fear of any sanction. The children are completely brainwashed. And that's why I say we have a big battle ahead of us. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Why do fools fall in love? Why do birds sing?
Sing so gay. sing so gay? Why do birds sing so gay? All right, stop the childish jokes, Maywolf. Stop putting that in my head. Now, here's Nancy Pelosi. I pray to God that they reelect her to be the minority speaker, whatever, leader, minority leader. They're going to be the minority come January. God knows what they're going to do to us till then. Because, God, do we need Nancy Pelosi going into 2012. The world would not be the same without her. Now, here she is in clip 13 saying that, well, listen.
The reason the election results are what they are is because we have 9.5% unemployment in our country. We didn't lose the election because of me. In any circumstance, we have 9.5% unemployment. Any party that cannot turn that into a political
See, she's on, now she's against the ropes now.
I said that before the election. The reason they had to try to...
All right. So she's justifying that most of her party wants her to step down because they know that she was the lightning rod with her, you know, with her actions and her arrogance, and they want her gone. She's blaming unemployment. Well, okay, she can blame unemployment, but they were in charge, and we still have the unemployment, so therefore it is her. She's the one who jammed the various bills down our throat. Didn't change the unemployment, it made it worse. You know. But, we, you know, we all know this already. What else do we have in sound? The boy to take the flag off his bike? Oh, here's one. Oh, this is red meat for the right wing. NPR, as you know, is a communist front group. Longtime communist Maoist front group that should be put out of business yesterday. Most of them are incompetent dolts who couldn't get a job if they didn't live off the fat of the land. Here is a reporter on NPR where the reporter says that Al-Qaeda is a good boss. Listen to clip 10.
Bruce Hoffman says Al-Qaeda Central is just being a good boss.
A good manager also knows when to step in and provide the top-down guidance that can take an idea off
guidance.
The drawing board and implement it.
And that's what's kind of different, since they hadn't been doing that before?
I think there was much less of it.
You know, guidance, you know. Which schools did you go to, Bruce? You're such a smart boy, chick. Do you understand what we're talking about here? This is NPR, an American organization, supposedly, that steals tax dollars in order to give salaries to idiots who couldn't get a job in commercial radio, who are going up on the air and glorifying the men who are murdering our boys in Iraq and Afghanistan. Listen again to Bruce Hoffman and Dina Rastin of NPR in clip 10.
Bruce Hoffman says Al-Qaeda Central is just being a good boss.
A good manager also knows when to step in and provide the top-down guidance that can take
guidance.
An idea off the drawing board and implement it.
And that's what's kind of different.
Did you hear what he just said? Step in and give the guidance to take an idea off the board and implement it? He is glorifying the enemy. Me, I'm in charge. He's tried on sedition. And his fat behind goes into a jail for other traitors. However, if I were boss, there wouldn't be enough prisons to hold all of the traitors I'd throw into the prison cells. Let me tell you that right now. Listen to how this starts in clip 8.
Investigators are working under the theory that Al-Qaeda's core leadership may have had a hand in the foiled attack. One reason? The plot was just too sophisticated for AQAP to pull off on its own.
AQAP has shown itself to be so deviously or fiendishly clever.
Bruce Hoffman runs the
security
studies program.
Do you hear this college boy? Fiendishly, deviously clever. Another little, a couple of pat phrases from this snot-nosed freak. Can you believe the kind of garbage that they put out on NPR now giving aid and support to our enemy? Glorifying them? These throat-cutting, woman-hating, America-hating, freedom-hating throwbacks? And you pay tax dollars to NPR thanks to Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama. Me, I'd cut NPR to the bone. I'd cut it off the air. It's a communist socialist front group, an organ of hate.
Savage.
Hey, la di ding dong, a lang a lang a lang, boom ba do, ba do ba do ba ba. Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love, life could be a dream, sweetheart. Hello, hello again, shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again. Oh, life could be.
Welcome back to Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Now, we have a very interesting soundbite of the poor president at the G20 meeting in South Korea. where he is challenged by a reporter from CBS, and he gets very defensive, almost adolescent in his reaction. Listen to three.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was only complaints, concerns, or...
Wow. No, seriously. You know, look, did you hear that? This is frightening. He's very, very defensive about this question. This is a president. This is not a teacher. When a student challenges him, listen again. Listen. Hold it. Let's start again. You say, okay, big deal. Stop blowing it up. He's just a human being. He's had a rough week. Look at all the time. Look at what he had to do in India. All those meals, all those banquets. And look at the trouble he had in Indonesia, visiting his school, visiting the madrasas he went to. It was tough work. So now he's in South Korea. It's the last leg of the trip, probably. They'll probably stop in Honolulu for a little, you know, home week or whatever. And he gets a question that's real from Chip Reed. Listen to it again.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was only complaints, concerns, or...
Sounds like a husband with a wife. That's something like a husband would say. What about no compliments? It's like, nah. It's like, you didn't put that in a list. It's almost like a chick would say that. Truthfully, the other way around is what it is. Where a husband asks something of the wife, and someone says, well, what did someone say about your housekeeping? What were some of the concerns that the relatives had about your housekeeping and how you took care of your house? And then the chick says, what am I, no compliments? You didn't have that one on your list of how clean I am, how good I am in the kitchen, but only complaints and concerns? It's pretty unbelievable. Listen to three again.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was only complaints, concerns, or...
All right, you know, it's almost sad now. See, funny, I don't like to see him on the ropes like this. I want a strong president, even a leftist. I want him to be, you know, macho. I don't like that metro thing. The best was the 07, where he 06, where he calls a Chinese a Korean. Listen to six.
This gentleman right here, he's got his hand up. He's the only one who took me up on it. Go ahead. And I'll probably need a translation, though, if you're asking the question in Korean. In fact, I definitely will need a translation.
Unfortunately, I hate to disappoint you, President Obama. I'm actually Chinese.
Oh, my God. I actually want to have Chinese food now. I told you I'm very suggestible. When he was in Indonesia, I wanted the rice table. I couldn't find one. When he's in India, I went to an Indian restaurant. I ate the buffet. I like Chinese people. I've always gotten along with them. I only wish they weren't communists. That's the one thing. Why can't they just all go capitalist and get rid of that Mao Tse-Tung business once and for all? I admire them. They've always been an industrious nation. Going back, they had six-masted sailing ships. You have no idea how advanced they were. They got set back by communism. First, they were set back by the warlords, which killed all of the development of China. But the worst thing that ever happened to the Chinese people was Mao Tse-Tung's revolution, which he got from Karl Marx. His brain was ruined. Karl Marx ruined most of the world with his insanity. He's caused more death and destruction than any single, shall I say, philosopher in the history of the world. The worst, like a scythe taken to the middle class across the globe. Go tell that to your tenured professor brainwashing your daughter, who's going to come home for Thanksgiving with purple hair and rings on various body orifices. Go ahead, go tell her why that happened to her. She's going to sit at the Thanksgiving table sneering at you, probably on either marijuana or crack cocaine. God only knows what she'll be doing in the bathroom. All because of your college education that you paid, you killed yourself for. You know, I feel bad for kids. You look at them in the mall. I feel bad for the children. I look at the parents. The women look like Stepford wives. They're like blank. They all got great bodies. You know, everyone exercises. They starve themselves. They're anorexic. They look like post-op transvestites. It's true. But, okay, some of us like that look. It's not such a bad look. You know, today, and everything's different. I mean, you look back 100 years how women look. They look like women. You know, normal hips, Norman, what? Like a normal woman. Now, if they look like a normal woman, ugh, I don't want to look like a woman. I want to look like a guy who's just going to come back with, like, surgery. But anyway, let's put that aside. That's just personal taste with people. But you look in their eyes, they're like blank. It's like staring into a blankness. I preferred like regular women with carriages, rocking them outside like Longfellow Avenue, wearing like babushkas and big dresses. It was another world. I mean, the children weren't kidnapped at the rate they are today. They didn't wind up in shallow graves. The mothers were with them every second. They knew the world was filled with horrendous monsters out there. They would kill a man who looked at the child in my day. The mothers would kill him with a rolling pin. They would have attacked them with umbrellas, with anything they had. They looked him one look at one child, they beat the hell out of him. All the women would have attacked the man in the street. Let's say a strange guy came to the neighborhood, and they were like rocking their children. Toddlers were running around, the boys are playing. If anyone, a strange guy came by and looked the wrong way, the women would have beat the guy up. Now it's like they invite him in to look at the gas line. Sure, come on in. Why not? I'm tolerant. I've been brainwashed in school into accepting everything. Except people who love America. That's the one thing we can't tolerate, is the American flag and the love for America. Everything else is fine. Fine. Mexican flag, perfect. That's all. I'm just rambling on with my views of the world. I know you love it because you think the way I do. I'm giving voice to your innermost thoughts. That's all I can do on the radio. That's my single most important role. Forget reading the news and giving you my views. Very important. The most important thing, though, is the emotional bond I create with you by exhibiting what's inside me and daring to speak it out. And then you say, holy God, it's exactly what I think. I'm like, your guy's amazing. It's like he's reading my mind. I know, believe me, I know, 16 years in the making. It didn't happen overnight. I'm no overnight success, my friends. No, trust me on that one. There's no overnight deal here. This long time in the making. It took millions of years for me to get here. Think of the evolutionary process. Ancestors through privation, they were still reading books. 1,000 years ago, they were reading like the Bible, studying and reading books. I mean, they didn't just get born yesterday. What do you think? This is an accident that you like the show? You could even do this if you play golf. I mean, truthfully. It's not about education. It's about inspiration. It's not about education. It's about inspiration. So what would you like to do on the show today? We're nearing the crux of the end of this hour. It's Friday. Many of you are nervous because it's another long weekend with nothing to do. You're saving your money for the turkey. I have not even ordered one yet. And every year is the same thing. I wait till Monday and the little ones are gone. Like the mini turkey. I want a 12-pound turkey. It's gone. They sell me like a 24-pound turkey. Forget about it. Who could eat such a thing? You can't even get the thing in an oven. You need a kiln to cook the thing. They go to like the local ceramic shop and ask them if they can cook the bird for me. 26 pounds is all we got left, buddy. They love to. Okay, you got a 12-pounder on Monday. What, are you kidding me? The only thing we got is a 26-pounder. Get online, you know what I mean? But I love this holiday. I'm one of these guys who actually buys chestnuts and I know how to cook. They're very tricky chestnuts. They explode if you don't know how to do it. The first year I tried to do a traditional Thanksgiving, they blew up in the oven. A mess that you can't believe. Easy off. Nothing worked. You got to cut an X in the thing. Did you know that? Did you know that you have to cut an X in a chestnut to roast them and all of that? Everything is a specialty. Everything you have to know. Nothing is easy in this world. You try it. You know, when you, let's say you're a college person. Oh, let's just have a Thanksgiving. We're not with our parents. We'll make a turkey. Did you ever eat a thing like that? Horror never comes out, right? The kids don't know how to cook. Because you can't just do it on your own. You know, how hard is it to cook a turkey? My mother did a big deal. It's hard to do it right. Basting with the skin to make it golden. My mother, God bless her, she could make that. A duck she could make. She knew the trick. She used the orange juice, the duck de l'orange. Now I want that for dinner. Too high in cholesterol. I feel bad for the duck. Turkey I don't feel bad for. It's that gullet. They look like Mitch McConnell, so I don't feel that bad. But the duck, I don't know, the duck is like Donald Duck, Daffy Duck, you know, I feel bad for them because I used to like ducks. Plus their beautiful plumage. Where I bicycle now, there's like ducks. You see the mother duck, the father duck, the baby ducks. They take better care of their children than most American women. They feed them better. The mother duck knows more about nutrition than the average white American woman knows about nutrition for the child. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I was in a mall, or it was 2 days ago. Again, mall. My whole life is in a mall. It's the product of it. See, I live in San Francisco and in the suburbs. That way I have a taste of two things. I have a taste of the city, which is what a great city it is. I love it. I don't let the freak show get to me. I really don't, because there's a lot of normal people around. Like they just lit up the skating rink, the ice skating rink down at Justin Herman Plaza. It's one of the things I love, is watching the kids ice skate around. It reminds me of my youth. The only thing I hate is the crack music they play, booming crack music. They can't play Bing Crosby, White Christmas. They have to play horrible crack music to the ice skating rink. Not everything's polluted. The whole society is wrecked for political correctness and catering to the lowest common denominator. I'm sick of it. Play Christmas music, I say to myself. I lasted 4 minutes. I saw the children, but I couldn't take with the noise. The noise. What's that in the background? What, am I going crazy? All right, come on, knock it off. It's too early for that. I happen to find it soothing, and you know, it doesn't bother anyone. But in the I got to tell this before I forget the point. Nutrition and the white mother, the suburban white mother who allegedly looks good with the big lips. They all have like weird lips. They're scary looking. With the Botox lips, they're frightening, actually. They look like Clarabelle. Something's weird with those lips. I don't like actors. Whatever happened to women with normal lips? When did the big lip thing become like a deal, that they had to get a big lip? That's voluptuous, a big lip? Looks like they have a disease. Looks like they were stung like on a farm. Anyway, that's my own personal preference. I prefer small ears and small lips. But okay, you like the other thing, it's your problem. So I'm at the mall again, out in the suburb. I'm going to get a hero, meatball hero. I was ruining my diet and my arteries. I was like anxious. I reverted to childhood foodie. It was so good. It was so good, man. That meatball hero, when you haven't had one in 29 years, the way that bread cracks and you, oh God, with sauce dripping down on your neck. You have to lean over. You know, I couldn't even wait to get it home in the car. I walked around, I leaned over, like you bite into it, you burn your palate, like one of those. You know how that good it is? You let yourself go for a minute. Because that was the day Obama was giving away another part of our national security. And I read that the Long Dong missile could wipe out the West Coast. I figured, the heck with it, have a meatball hero. You know what I mean? So I'm eating the meatball hero, trying to avoid burning my palate. Avoid gravy on my shirt, leaning over, you know, and I'm walking around, and I walk past the Chinese restaurant, which has outdoor tables, and lo and behold, there's three little cute, little sweet, little 12, 14, 14-year-old, like, high school or junior high girls, like, innocent little lambs, and they're eating outside. So I'm like a curious guy. I look at everything. Nothing passes my eye. I look at everything. That's how I was originally a biologist. I looked at plants and things that you can't believe about plants and animals. So I look at everything. I want to see what the girls are eating. Look what they're eating. They're sharing a box of white rice, and they're pouring some hot sauce over it, and they're eating it like it's a feast. And I said to myself, these poor children, they're malnourished. That's why their brains don't function. The Asians had beriberi from eating white rice all those years. If they were eating just plain brown rice, all right. But they're not. They're eating milled rice. They're eating a beriberi diet, and their dumb mothers don't even tell them what nutrition is. The mothers don't even know. The girls think that they're doing something green by eating just rice. They're not eating any animal product. They're living light on the earth. And the poor children, they're deficient in every major nutrient. And I'm going to say something to them, they arrest me. So I have to button my lip. That's why I wrote Healing Children Naturally, because... And I'm not selling a book. I can't believe it. How the lack of knowledge has permeated every corner of society. So don't assume that because they live in an affluent white suburb that they know what they're doing. Most of them are dumb bunnies. You understand? And their children are the same. And it's frightening and it's heartbreaking. Believe me. That's why I said to you, it's good to have knowledge. But if you eat of the apple of knowledge, what is it? What good is it if the people around you are ignoramuses? Let me take a quick call, then a break. Lisa in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Quick. I'm short of time.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have to take you back to that comment you made about the quote by Paul, and you slipped in that little bit of Joe and Paul Safaganiggin.
Yeah, but that's only for the people who understand that. They're from old New York days. No one knows what that is. It's an old radio jingle. How do you know that living in Sacramento, in Gehenna?
Because I came from the Bronx.
You're in the Bronx, stuck in Sacramento?
Yes. And I used to...
What are you laughing about? What, you have to eat in, like, Epler's or, like... there's no food in Sacramento. Is a decent restaurant in Sacramento?
I make my own crepler.
What is a kreplach? That's basically an international food. If I go to a Chinese restaurant and I get a dumpling, isn't that the same thing, basically?
Oh, kreplach, you got
it. Come on, it is. The different. Look, a piroshki is a kreplach as a dumpling. Every culture has the same thing. Only the difference is the Chinese are smart. I mean, they put in pork. My mother made that wrap with a potato. No one in the world could ever make that. She put potato and onions in it. Play the song for her, though. Go ahead. Play it on the way out.
Joe and Paul, let's start a fire kriegen, brabarilla Joe and Paul, that let your booty kriegen, brabarilla so. I go, I get in zole, perfect, I fit in daft here, kuiven, nor by Joe and Paul.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was only complaints, concerns, or...
Awful. Just awful. Just horrible. I feel bad for him now. I'm a strange guy. I was the same way as a kid. If I would get into a fight with a kid, when I beat him, I felt bad for him. Isn't that a weird thing? I'd rather walk away and be insulted than fight with people who I could beat. It was a strange thing. I don't like seeing somebody beaten. Isn't that a weird thing in me? That's a strange thing I had to live with all my life. There was always like a compassion in me for the other person. It's probably to my detriment, truthfully. It's like letting the other guy win when you shouldn't. I feel bad for Obama sounding like a chick, like a housewife. And he said, what about compliments, man? I didn't say anything about good things. Only complaints and concerns? Awful. Terrible. Well, he had a hard week, you know, the India, the Indonesia. It's a tough, tough gig. I couldn't be any kind of politician. You know, you can ridicule all you want, sit on the sidelines. It's a tough job. There's no one on earth who could do this job right, I don't think, anymore. I almost think that they need a president like a council. A council of people to be president. No head person. Now, who could take this job day in and day out? You could do this with a suit and a tie, number one. That would eliminate me in the runoff. If I had to put on a suit and tie four times a day, once a day, once a week, once a year is too much for me. I got a black tie dinner coming up December 15th. I don't even want to go to. But the tables were so expensive, I paid for it already at the museum. I got involved with the art museum. I like art. I figured now, but I'm like dreading it. I have the same tuxedo I bought for my daughter's wedding like 10 years ago. They'll bury me in this thing. I look at it, I get weirded out. It's like reminds me of the 19th century, like coffin. I always see like morgues. I have a very, very, very macabre sense of humor. That's some sense of humor to put on a suit and think of a coffin, right? Very nice. Am I the only one who thinks this way? What is wrong with me, I say to myself. Answer, nothing. You're the one who's sick if you don't think like this.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up.
never know. Please, Eddie, don't make me wait too long.
The Supreme Court today keeps gays in the military policy in place during appeal. What does that mean? You can read this 40 different ways, and it's hard to understand because the writing, it becomes so bad. In the press, you don't know what the hell it is. In plain English, the Supreme Court will allow the existing don't ask, don't tell policy to remain in effect until the appeals process is completed. In other words, the pressure from gay groups like the Log Cabin Republicans have been rejected. You have to read it 50 different times to figure this out, don't you? It's amazing to me how bad the writing is. Maybe it's on purpose. I don't know anymore.
That's what the great journalist schools of today are producing.
I mean, I've read this in 5 different ways. I didn't know what it meant. It was hard to understand it. Supreme Court keeps gays in the military policy in place during appeal. That has no meaning, does it? That's the headline on CNN. So you have to decipher it. What it is that the don't ask, don't tell policy that's in place, that is law, will remain in place, period. That's all. This is the most important question, as you well know, during two wars. It's really the most pressing question. And here's another story that's got people crazy all over the country, really angry, agitated, outraged. Schoolboy puts an American flag on his bicycle. He goes to school on Veterans Day with a flag waving because his grandfather was a World War II hero. And the vermin principal makes the boy take the American flag off the bike because the school was concerned about Mexicans causing uprisings.
That's disgusting.
A school official at Denair Middle School told the boy, 13-year-old boy, some students have been complaining about the flag and it was no longer allowed on school property. Now, I asked my producer to contact the family.
Yeah, we spoke briefly to the grandfather, who's a really nice guy.
Oh, good. Very, very good. Well, apparently the school has reversed itself now, hasn't it? Officials later backtrack, allow boy to fly flag on bike.
Yeah, once the pressure was turned on, that wasn't their first instinct, though.
13-year-old Cody Alicia rides with an American flag on the back of his bike. He says he does this to be patriotic and to honor veterans like his own grandfather, Robert, who was a Vietnam vet. The school was concerned about racial tensions or uprising because of the American flag. Isn't that nice?
Beautiful.
After being contacted by Fox 40 Friday morning, Denair's superintendent, whoever that is, says that the boy will be allowed to keep the flag on his bike. He said that the school is patriotic, but their main priority is keeping students safe. He said the school will focus on the students who are causing uprisings. Really? They're going to crack down on the Mexicans, the illegal aliens, who are threatening us for a boy flying around with an American flag?
Yeah, how many Mexican now, flags are carried around on bicycles at that same school?
It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story. Here's a government attacking the citizens themselves, attacking people who are proud of American values, and supporting illegal aliens who should be kicked out, as far as I am concerned.
It's like you were talking about yesterday. The body is attacking itself. The defense cells are, I mean, it's a cancer. It's a cancer.
Right, and I'm sure they're allowed to fly Mao flags, Mao T-shirts, Che Guevara shirts and T-shirts. I'm sure they're allowed to fly the rainbow homosexual flag, are they not, Beowulf?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised.
On the back of their bicycle?
Yeah, what would the reaction to that be if they took that flag away from someone?
Yeah. How about an American, Mexican flag? Can they fly that as well?
Good question.
Well, apparently this has been reversed. But all I can say is what's happened to this country is beyond comprehension, and it's coming out of the schools. The traitorous scum who run the schools should be fired. They're trying to destroy our country by corrupting our children with their socialist beliefs. The flag. My God. Instead of going after the Mexicans who they were afraid of. So they have to teach the kids to be diverse and tolerant, huh? Respect Muslim traditions. Make kids dance like tribes in Africa. but they can't even fly their own flag. How do you like that?
Crazy.
Look, it's time for Cody and the rest of us to understand what's happened to this country. End of story is, why worry about the kid who's flying his flag? Why didn't the Mexicans be told that if they went near the flag or the boy, they'd be thrown out of the country with their parents? How about that? Would that have?
I mean, if someone is threatening this kid, why not focus on the people that are threatening him, for God's sake?
Mm-hmm. Here's the evilness of the socialists in action. A young boy puts a U.S. flag on his bicycle, and the school makes him take it down.
The red, white, and blue have been at the back of Cody's bike for almost 2 months now. But Monday, he was forced to take it down. Turns out the flag is not welcome at his middle school. A school official told Cody that some kids were complaining about the flag on his bike, and they asked him to take it off before he comes onto school grounds.
Why did they take his flag, though?
The red, white, and blue have been at the back of Cody's bike for almost 2 months now. But Monday, he was forced to take it down. Turns out the flag is not welcome at his middle school. A school official told Cody that some kids were complaining about the flag on his bike, and they asked him to take it off before he comes onto school grounds.
They say racial tensions? You mean from illegal aliens from Mexico who threatened him? This is unbelievable. A real patriotic child, and he is targeted, not the Mexican illegals who threatened him? These school officials should be sued. In the meantime, Obama is bumbling in Korea.
In Toronto, we said, here's what we need to do. Let's have this ready by the time we get to Seoul. It wasn't real sexy.
Sexy? How insensitive of Obama.
This gentleman right here, he's got his hand up. He's the only one who took me up on it. Go ahead. And I'll probably need a translation, though. If you're asking the question in Korean. In fact, I definitely will need a translation.
Unfortunately, I hate to disappoint you, President Obama. I'm actually Chinese.
Oh, yeah, being president is far more complicated than you expected, Mr. O. And so is being Speaker of the House, Miss P.
The reason the election results are what they are is because we have 9.5% unemployment in our country. We didn't lose the election because of me. In any circumstance, when you have 9.5% unemployment, any party that cannot turn that into a political gain should hang up the gloves. I said that before the election. The reason they had to try to take me down is because I've been effective in fighting the special interest in Washington, D.C. I'm also the most significant attractor of support for the Democrats.
Well, of course it wasn't Nancy's fault.
The position that we have, and which is the position that the president has put forth, is that everybody should get a tax cut in our country. The problem comes when you give an additional tax cut to the wealthiest 2% that will heap $700 billion in debt onto our children and our grandchildren.
She can barely get the words out of her mouth. Now, if we can only get her mouth out of the house.
Savage.
I'm a loser, I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be. Of all the love I have won or have lost.
It isn't about me. Maybe the Republicans will take a course of action that will solve problems. God bless them if they do.
My friend, I should have known. She would win in the end. I'm a loser, and I love someone who's dear to me. I'm a loser.
Pelosi says we didn't lose because of her. She said she has the overwhelming support of fellow Democrats in her bid to become minority leader. And she said, we didn't lose the election because of me. That's what she told NPR. Look where she went with her message, NPR. You like that, Beowulf?
Typical.
She said the reason 60 seats were lost to the Demon Cats was because of high unemployment and $100 million of outside unidentified funding. Well, she should know about that. She should know about that. But apparently many, many mainstream Democrats are turning against her. They want her out. The only people wanting her to stay are me and the Republicans, who are all giddy at the prospect of her as Speaker of the House.
It's interesting. In some of these clips, she really fumbles around. I mean, it's almost as if she's taking solace in something.
Here's another story, seeking guidance on Dodd-Frank's diversity clause. As Wall Street scrambles to comply with the regulations of the Dodd-Frank financial overhaul, look who overhauled Wall Street. Talk about the foxes in the chicken coop. One little notice provision has executives scratching their heads. The statute included in the bill creates 20 offices of minority and women inclusion at the various regulatory agencies, including Treasury, SEC, FDIC, Office of the Comptroller, all 12 Federal Reserve Banks, the newly created Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. All of them now need a new Office of Minority and Women Inclusion. Can you believe this?
Jesus, one bureaucracy after another for affirmative action.
Guess who was behind this?
Oh.
Maxine Waters, Democrat of California, who wanted diversity regulators in all the agencies to help correct so-called racial and gender imbalances at Wall Street firms.
The incorruptible Maxine Waters as well.
It's unbelievable. So now we're going to have this wasting more money.
Well, they're shovel-ready jobs, though.
Yeah, to shovel what, though? Have to understand that America has gone to its apogee, and we're heading to the perigee. We're not in the perigee, but I mean, we've seen the height. We're on the way down. We're on the way down. You know, if you look, I'm sorry to bum you out, but if you want to show that, you know, how to win friends and influence people with nothing but this malarkey that the Republicans are going to encourage tax incentives and cut back taxes, and then the guy who owns the business is suddenly going to hire your child because he's encouraged. He's going to take every dime he can in his own pocket. That's all. And he's going to spend it on himself. He's not going to create a squat for you. What, are you kidding me? I know guys who own restaurants. They all bellyache when they raise their taxes like it's coming out of their pocket. They wouldn't create another job. They just cut their waiter's income. That's all. I mean, let's be realistic. The primary rule of American society is greed. And looking out for number one. Now, let's stop with the pie in the sky nonsense that the Republicans have the answer. They have nothing. They had their answer for 8 years. What'd they do to us? They give us George Bush, socialism light. Let's go back. Now take a deep breath because I know you didn't want to hear it. You want to hear the malarkey. You want to hear the malarkey. The malarkey. Free market is going to create jobs for your child. You know, they're going to create nothing for your child. That's all. Let's go back in time. Post-war America, post-World War II, or post-war Italy, for example. The country was wrecked in Italy after the war. And so consequently, in many European countries, until they rebuilt their societies, children lived at home. They had no health care from the government. They had no care at all. They got sick, they took care of themselves, or the family gave them something like a bowl of pasta fazool and told them to get their behind out of bed. You know, stop laying around like a malingerer. Stop making yourself sick. And either they got better or they got worse. They got better. What are you, promised eternal life somewhere? An eternal job, Teddy? I'm talking to my dog. He's looking right at me. You promised a house in the suburbs? No, that's not good enough for the children till age 26. They don't want a house in the suburbs. They want a loft. They want a big apartment. They want a penthouse. They want a penthouse in the meatpacking district so they can be out until 4 o'clock in the morning and then come home and not go to work. They're entitled to it. They're entitled to that. They're entitled to health care. They're entitled to a job. Where did you read this? Where is this written? You know what you're entitled to in America? Freedom. And you're entitled to make the best you can out of your life. That's about it. It's a free country. Make of it what you can. No one owes you anything. Where's it written? They owe you a house? They owe you health care. They owe you nothing. What do you mean they owe you? Out of my pocket, I owe you? I owe you nothing. I'm sick of these deadbeats in my country. I'm sick of the millions of illegal aliens sponging off my hard work. I get sick when I see them in the hospitals. I get sick when I see them destroying our schools. It makes me ill. Because I am the son of an immigrant, and I had to learn English to go to school. And let me tell you something. If you spoke another language, you know what happened? You fell behind. And guess what? It encouraged people to learn. They stumbled. They didn't do as well. They got D's instead of A's because they had a language problem, and then eventually they learned English. Some went on to school and made something of themselves. Now you teach them in Spanish? English as a second language? Why? Why are you pandering to these people? How did this happen that in my city of San Francisco, the ballot is in 8 to 10 languages? You mean you don't have the desire to learn the language of the land, but you have the desire to vote in Nancy Pelosi and the goon squad that runs this sick city? Why? Jury rigging, vote rigging, all the same. Just as you can fix a jury, you can fix a vote. The same thing. You can buy a vote. You can buy a jury. It makes no difference. All the same. I need some rock and roll already. I just got a stomach ache from that. Very good. I'll be right back. Now that the elections are over, it's time to start working on getting the country turned around. And one of the reforms being talked about is how to control earmarks or how to get rid of them. There is a bill being worked on now that says it will rid Congress of these earmarks, but some, like Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma, are saying that this bill is not the way to go. He joins us now to discuss this problem. Senator Inhofe, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Good. Well, Michael, let me tell you, it's always great being back with you. I appreciate the opportunity. I can remember back when I had to take on everybody on this global warming thing. It's hard to believe it's been 8 years since I said it was the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people, but we won, they lost, and that's behind us. Unfortunately, this subject that we have now is kind of in the same thing.
Why do you say that?
This fraudulent issue of earmarks is something that has been, the people have been brainwashed on. I was talking to our good friend Frank Luntz the other day. Frank was saying, well, you know, I agree with your position. It's been demagogued. It's a phony issue, but they've been brainwashed out there, so people are just, you know, you never change their mind. I said that's what they said about global warming 9 years ago. Now, not that I want to spend 9 years doing this. There is a solution to what is perceived to be a problem on earmarks. First of all, let me just say, Michael, that when the House did their thing on earmarks, their one-year moratorium, I was the only one who said that it had to be the dumbest thing you could do, because what they're doing is they defined what an earmark was by the rules of the House.
Well, what does that actually mean?
It's defined as an appropriation or an authorization. In other words, spending. And this is exactly what Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, you know this very well, this is what James Madison wanted us to do. If the House and the Senate were to spend the money. Now, earmarks is, you know, they define that is that if you take a moratorium on earmarks defined as spending the money, then you're giving all that back to the president. That's why President Obama is very much behind this McCain-DeMint thing that we're going to have this next week, because they know that if we should do what the House does, then we won't be appropriating money. And if you don't do it, it goes right back to the president's budget, and he will do it.
What does this mean for us?
Let me give you an example. I'm on the Armed Services Committee. We have a lot of experts there. We get a budget from the president who says that we're going to do this is how to defend America. Well, you know, the president doesn't know anything about defending America. And so we actually take his budget in the bottom line, live within it, but we take his stuff out and put our stuff in, such as missile defense, such as six more F-18 fighters, and we change his budget. Now, if someone says that's an earmark and they don't do it, then it goes right back into the lap of Obama, and he spends all the money. And I know people don't understand that, but that's true. Let me give an example. The 102 most egregious earmarks. I read them on the Senate floor, all 102 of them. And when I was through, I said, All right, what do all of these 102 ridiculous earmarks have to do and have in common? Not one is a congressional earmark. They were all Obama bureaucratic earmarks. And that's exactly what we would do if we refused to spend the money, as the Constitution tells us we should. And you're fully aware of this.
Well, what then is the solution if not eliminating the earmarks?
I've got a solution, by the way. On Monday, I'm going to be on the Senate floor, and I'm going to go through this whole thing. Then I'm going to offer a solution that's going to end this debate forever. It's going to be a bill that everyone should. The only ones who would oppose this are people who want to keep this issue open so they can continue to demagogue it on the floor of the Senate. Now, people are talking about DeMint. This actually was been the original on the earmark thing was McCain. So it was McCain, then of course one of his closest friends is my junior senator, Tom Coburn. They've been using this and demagoguing earmarks now for such a long period of time. People have said, well, Inhofe, why is it you didn't say anything about it before now? Well, there's a very good reason.
Well, what is that?
McCain, Coburn were up for re-election in 2010. What I didn't want to do, even though they had no meaningful opposition, I didn't want Republicans to think that I would do anything to endanger them, because I was still in hopes that Republicans would be able to take over the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
If we allow them to continue to do what they're doing now, just demagoguing earmarks, and if for some reason they should say that we are putting a moratorium or a ban on earmarks or spending, then that means that it'll all be done by none other than Barack Obama. And I would hate to think that these great new conservative Tea Party senators who have been elected would be forced to vote, their very first vote, to trash the Constitution and to violate their oath of office.
What kind of feedback are you getting on this?
Well, I've been actually, as you well know, I do more talk radio shows than any other member. And by the way, let's remind everyone, the person who's talking right now, me, I've been ranked as the most conservative member of the United States Senate. This is not coming from an old guard. This isn't coming from an appropriator. I've never been an appropriator. But I was ranked by the National Journal as the number one most conservative member out of all 100 senators. The same human events have me in the same category. So I'm the conservative making these statements. It's just that I'm not afraid to stand up and tell the truth and expose what these guys are really trying to do. So that's my motive in this thing, is just to make sure we resolve and put to rest this whole earmark thing. I have legislation that would do that. I'll be announcing on the floor of the United States Senate on Monday. And I would think the only ones who would oppose that are the ones who want to keep this issue alive so they can continue demagoguing it.
Well, where do you think it goes from here?
What I think is going to happen is that hopefully my bill will pass and that will solve the problem. Now, I do know that they're going to try to get the Republican conference to do the same thing that the Republican conference did in the House of Representatives. And if that is the case, that means only Democrats will be actually making appropriations instead of Republicans. That's not quite true, because I will continue. I'm not going to allow them to pass something in conference that will keep me from carrying out my constitutional duties. I just think too much of America to do that.
How do you read the election results?
It was a great election, and a lot of them used that issue, and that's what I told a lot of the Tea Party people, Rand Paul and others. I said, go ahead, say anything you want to about earmarks. We need to get you elected. We need, and hopefully, I was hoping, of course, for a majority in the House. Look at the huge majority they have right now. And I think that, you know, if you were to talk to some of the responsible House members, like maybe Tom Cole, from Oklahoma, he would tell you that over in the House, he felt very strongly that the House should not have done what they did. But it's one of these things where there's so many people out there that are brainwashed that was supposed to be some great issue that we could use. Look, we have huge issues. We need to be doing something about the deficit, about the debt, about Obamacare, about make sure they don't bring up cap and trade again, or one of my favorite issues, to keep the liberals from closing Gitmo. These are things that we need to have to save America, and I'm just hoping they can put to sleep this issue of earmarks, because it's a bogus issue, and I know I have to remind everyone that this is coming from a conservative. And I don't know. I know nobody else will say what I'm saying, but that's exactly what it's been my career. I end up doing things no one else is willing to do.
What can we, the people, do?
What we can do, fortunately, I think it's to the point now where we're going to take away the bogus issue from the demagoguers and by passing something. And I'm going to have a bill that is that you cannot look at that and refuse to support it. And it will put this whole thing to rest. So that's what people can do is get educated. And I know even some of the really knowledgeable people, even Rush has not been on the right side of this issue because it takes a lot of risk to be on the right side of this issue. That's why, Michael, I'm glad to be on your show because you've never been afraid to do what you and your mind believes is the right thing. And also, with your protection, historically, of the Constitution, this is a constitutional question. It's one that the Federalist Papers say what James Madison says we're supposed to be doing in the United States Senate and in the House, and we intend to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've coined a new phrase for or a new definition for people who demagogue. I call them goggers, G-O-G-U-E-R-S. And what the goggers have done, and I will give you the definition of demagoguery. It is a strategy for gaining political power by appealing to the prejudices, emotions, fears, and expectations of the public. And this is what I have to overcome. And certainly it hasn't been easy, but nonetheless, we're going to win this thing. And the outcome should come this coming week. It doesn't really matter how the conference votes on this. If people want to resolve the problem, they'll have an opportunity on Monday.
Senator Inhofe, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, let me tell you, I always enjoy it. You're a tough guy, but you're committed to what you believe, and that's what we need more of in the United States. So you're doing the Lord's work. Keep it up.
I agree that the out-of-control spending needs to be taken care of. The debt that our nation is facing is going to burden all future generations. It has to be stopped. I spent an entire book on this. You can read my solutions in Trickle Up Poverty. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Chinese missiles could close U.S. bases, an attack report says. The Chinese military's non-nuclear missiles have the capability to attack and close down 5 of 6 major U.S. Air Force bases in South Korea and Japan. China's improved inventory of short and medium-range missiles provided them a dramatic increase in their ability to destroy U.S. military operations in the Western Pacific. Well, we should thank Bill Clinton and the DNC for the early work on missile technology, don't you think, Beowulf?
Oh, yeah, I think so. That's a hell of a chilling story coming straight out.
Well, you want to hear what our defense secretary had to say about it? Here's a real strong defense secretary.
Oh, I can't wait.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates called China's improved missile arsenal a real concern.
God. I'm surprised.
Isn't that nice?
I'm surprised he didn't say, I don't even want to go there.
Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan and what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at Carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's Carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. James Bond's iconic Aston Martin sells for $4.1 million. I'm a car lover. I still am. I tried not to be for a number of years when I went through my anti-establishment phase. It all changed. I was poor, you know, poor graduate student with two kids. I had a broken old Volvo, a 4-on-the-floor, 4-cylinder piece of junk. It drove well. It drove well. It was a good car many years ago. I'll never forget as long as I lived the day I went back. See, when I was younger, I was an American boy. I still loved cars. I had old Jaguars. I had an AC Bristol. You have no idea the kind of cars I used to get. I was crazy about cars. I had a Morgan Plus 4, which I'll never forget to this day, racing through Central Park in the snow, skidding around. Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of good times there. At midnight, Central Park, a Morgan Plus 4, racing through the park with the snow falling on your face. It was a great night. Lucky I didn't get killed. But then, okay, you get married, you have kids, your mind goes into survival, you know, already with the race, with the car, blah, blah. In other words, you become like everyone else. So anyway, years later, So now I am in the house, the broken picket fence, and I'm driving an old Volvo, four cylinders, four on the floor. And I don't know, I got into a traffic stop race with a guy to a light once. Older guy, he had a newer car. We get to the light, he looks over at me, and he beat me. And as he's speeding away, he waves at me and he says, next time you get into a drag race, he said, get a faster, newer car. I got so mad, I couldn't catch up with him. But then when I got home, I was fuming. I said, you know, the guy's right. And I realized that he was right. That's all there is to it. In other words, if you don't have the equipment, don't engage in the competition, whatever it may be, cars, radio, television, writing, whatever it is. If you don't have the equipment, you know what I mean? Don't get into the field unless you're ready for it. Don't get into that cage. So as years have gone on, it's taken me a long time. You know, I'm back into the car thing. I have been for years. I have a little extra here and there. So I buy a car, this and that. So I look at this, the Aston Martin $4.1 million, which to me makes no sense at all. I have no idea why. The Aston Martin to begin with is not a great car anymore. And particularly that model. Oh, yeah, it's a unique car in the sense that it was in the movie, the James Bond films. But that model itself is not a particularly fine car. I think it's the old DB. Now, see, I'm getting distracted with stuff I really like talking about. Which is this one? They don't even say which model it is. DB5, featured in James Bond films, Goldfinger, Thunderball, Golden Key, Tomorrow Never Dies, and Casino Royale, was sold for $4.1 million. Yeah, all right, big deal. See, I wouldn't buy a car because it was in a movie, for example. But you could buy a car like that. I don't know what they go for, $150,000, still a lot of money for it. You're better off with a new Corvette, frankly, for $60,000 if you want a sports car. For the dollar, and if you're looking for sheer raceability on the streets and reliability, nothing could beat a Corvette. I don't own one. I'm saying I know cars well enough to tell you that. So I know we can't talk about it because the things are bad. Everyone's supposed to make believe they're broke. That's the newest thing. I love it. Everyone in the media who's worth millions and millions of dollars, suddenly they're appearing in ripped undershirts on book covers. Oh, I'm no money. I'm nothing. I'm just like you. Oh, I'm just like you. Just a loser like you. Yeah, my mother was a drunk. Come on. You remember when Limbaugh used to boast about basically flying over everyone and dumping on them? He doesn't do it anymore. What happened to that? Boasting about the airplanes and the cars. That went away all of a sudden. Well, he's all of a sudden driving an old Volvo. 1-800-449-8255. Shall I tell you about lessons from a tuna fish sandwich? Lessons from a tuna fish sandwich on the Savage Nation. Nah, I don't want to tell you about that. I'll make it the short version. I was 9 years old. I went to work with my father, right? And then I wanted to eat. My father screamed down the stairs as I was cleaning bronze. He says, go buy some lunch. So while I was out of the basement, my heart started to race when it became clear that he wasn't going with me. I hated the thought of facing the mean streets of Lower East Side alone, dodging the rats, the garbage, and the thugs hanging out in the street corners. I think my father saw my hesitation, but he insisted that I face those horrible streets alone. Sending me out into the byways of Manhattan was how he wanted to toughen me up. My father thought I might be too soft, you know, growing up in a safer neighborhood as we did, so off I go in search of lunch. Several blocks away was a restaurant that served no meat, just salads, tuna fish, and such. I ordered the tuna, paid the man behind the counter, and a few minutes later headed back to the store. When I gave my father the sandwich, he opened it up and saw a huge dead fly in it. I'll never forget his reaction. His face turned red. His eyes went wide as twin saucers, and the veins along both sides of his neck bulged. He looked as if he were ready to erupt like Mount St. Helens. Dad was infuriated that someone would take advantage of his kid like this. He assumed that they did it on purpose just to be spiteful. They probably did, but what did I know? Now, my father wasn't necessarily a violent man, but in that moment he looked as if he could have strangled a bear with his bare hands. He was incensed by the sheer wrongness of what he had discovered. So, my dad grabbed me by the hand and dragged me up the street back to that lousy luncheonette. He opens the door with a bang and looks around. The sleepy customers glance up from their menus with interest at this new development. Dad spots the owner coming out of the kitchen wearing a smirk and an apron as if nothing was wrong. My father unloaded with both barrels, yelling, "How dare you give my son a sandwich with a fly in it?" The deli man said, "Don't worry, I didn't charge you for it." I learned a valuable lesson that day. I learned that there are bad people in the world who will do bad things for whatever reason, and that remaining silent when faced with wrongdoing isn't an option. It might be unpopular to take a stand. It might turn a few heads. But my father taught me to speak up in the face of adversity, which brings us to Obama's socialist revolution, which is far worse than planting a fly in a tuna sandwich, which is all the more reason you and I have an obligation to speak against the destruction he's planning of this once great country. That's in Trickle Up, pages 76 and 77. So that's not bad. You see, lessons from a tuna fish sandwich. Who else could do that?
Savage.